The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Hey, hot dog guy, can I get 6 hot dogs down here, please?
Right away.
And make it right, please. You know, with the mustard and the ketchup and the relish. And don't make me hit you up for more.
Ball game with your folks, maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph, to maybe even taking your own kids to their very first game. It's the feeling that we all get. That kind of brings us back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel, our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that is going to capture it all right here in Philadelphia. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so check us out. The Museum of Sports show brought to you by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Now, joining me from his sports cave in Villanova, as he does every week, he is our guide and our mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founding vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers, and creator of the Museum of Sports, and author of the recent book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld.
Well, it's good to be back. We weren't live last week, so we couldn't commiserate about the Eagles' demise. But the Philadelphia is in a funk, as usual. And I apologize. I lost a tooth a couple of days ago, and only going to cost about $6,000 to get an implant. So I'm going to try and talk like this. But anyway, we were hoping to have Chris Wheeler on today from Clearwater. Yep. Talk about the Phillies, but he's in Memphis attending the funeral of Tim McCarver. Yep. I just want to say, a good guy Tim McCarver was. I hated him when he was with the Cardinals. I loved him when he was with the Phillies. I hired him when he retired to do baseball on Prism. And I gave Tim McCarver his start in broadcasting. And just a wonderful guy to be with, to drink with, to carouse with. Yeah. He is missed. He is absolutely missed.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, Susan Baxter, our Museum of Sports Director of Community Outreach, is off this week. Coming up today, he's the man behind the jaw-dropping images that you have seen over the years of the Philadelphia Flyers. Team photographer Lenny Redcoles is going to be here today on the Museum of Sports show. And our old king of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, he's going to tell us what is hot, not, and what's affordable in the memorabilia world. Mr. Nick DiPaccio Jr. is going to be joining us. But up first, you see him there in the Zoom box there. He is we've had him on many, many times. He, over the last few years, has made it his life's work, really, to be a vendor in every pro sports stadium in America. And he is chalking them up, you know, one hot dog, one beer, one bag of peanuts at a time. And he just is fresh from working the stands at the Eagles-Chiefs Super Bowl in Arizona. Ladies and gentlemen, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome back to our very good friend, Mr. Reggie Duvall-Saint. Reggie, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. How's everything today?
Pretty good, pretty good. I don't want you to crash. Keep your eye on the road there.
don't run into Embiid, please.
Yeah, exactly. Or otherwise, you're gonna lose a tooth like Rue, like Lou did. So Reggie, now you're driving. You're on Zoom right now, and it's your latest gig. You're heading to the Wells Fargo Center for tonight's 7:30 national game on TNT, right, Lou?
Right, TNT.
Between the Sixers and the Memphis Grizzlies. Now for our viewers and listeners who haven't seen you on the show before, and we try to do these fun walk and talks on Zoom, this latest job is sort of a little departure from your quest to be in every pro NFL and MLB venue. Remind everybody out there how this whole obsession got started.
Sure, absolutely. So I started about 5 or 6 years ago, actually at Marlins Park. That was where I got my start, which was cool. And flash forward about 5 years later, 6 years later now. And my goal is to hit every MLB and every NFL stadium as a beer vendor.
That's fantastic. So you kind of texted me kind of where you were on both of those. What have you got left for NFL, and what have you got left for MLB?
So for the NFL, I'm almost done. I've got one left, one pesky stadium left, which is Minnesota, which I will fight to get done next season. Yes.
Right back there. Right. You're going to need to bring me back something. You have to bring it. It can be cheap. I don't care. I have not been to U.S. Bank Stadium. My son's been
twice. It won't be a Lombardi trophy, I'll tell you that.
Well, there's that. But so now you right now you're heading to Wells Fargo Center. And we the last time we did this with you, it was the Field of Dreams game out at the actual stadium in Iowa back in, when was that, August?
Yeah, August of the summer. Yes, I'm sad that they're not doing it this season, but I hear that it's coming back in 2 years.
Yeah, well, it's probably because our good buddy Tommy Schaaf, who was one of the original owners, kind of got some pretty bad treatment by the new investors. So that's bad juju. It's bad karma. So so tell us, what's the procedure tonight? You're at Wells Fargo. Do you know what you're going to be doing, and what do you have to do to kind of get into the stadium?
Sure. So I'll be headed there right now. I'm supposed to clock in at about 4:15 or so. So you'll see me live going to the arena as I go, which will be cool. I'll be there tonight, most likely tomorrow as well. So for the Flyers.
Oh, really? So you're doing kind of a quasi double header then, sort of.
Yeah, absolutely. So during the winter, I primarily stick to New York and Philadelphia. Like that little break in between football season and baseball. Usually Madison Square Garden, I do Brooklyn Nets, and then I do the Wells Fargo Center as well. Just a nice little reprieve from traveling the country.
Yeah, and when you do, I noticed you just said it was NFL and MLB. Why did you just sort of confine yourself to that? Because you do a lot of NBA games, and you do a lot of NHL stuff too, and you do just regular old concerts.
That's correct. So I do a little bit of everything, but the key difference is the size of the crowds and the demand on a regular basis. So for an NFL stadium, you have 70 to 80,000 people. A baseball stadium, you might have 45 to 55,000 capacity crowds.
Yeah.
And you're needed more often. You're needed on a regular basis at the arenas, whereas for the sporting events like NFL and baseball, it's more of a come when you can approach.
Yeah. So what are you going to be doing tonight at Wells Fargo Center?
So actually tonight I'll be working in the boxes. I'm taking a break from vending beer. I am working as a suite attendant here at the Wells.
Oh, is that Lou? That sounds like kind of a promotion. Are you moving on up to the east side? Is that what that is?
You know, sometimes it's a little break from carrying the beer, which you need, you know, every now and then. So at the Wells, I do work as a suite attendant.
So what does that entail then? And I almost don't want to ask Lou because Lou used to traffic in boxes many years ago. Is that right, Lou? And Lou knows what goes on in those and suites,
especially during the afternoons. Matinees, man.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I figured. So what do you know? Do you have to wear like a, now when you do the vending thing, you have like a penny, right? But you don't, it's not like a full on uniform.
Well, now that you say that, so, well, speaking of vending uniforms, my closet is full of uniforms from all different stadiums, from all different venues. I have a closet like no other, full of stadium employee uniforms.
So now when you do, is this the first time you've done the suites at Wells Fargo?
No, I do the suites at the Wells on a regular basis. It's a break from carrying beer and carrying weight every night.
Oh God. Yeah. And it's probably a little more laid back. So what are you doing? Just kind of showing folks where stuff is. You're not providing services rendered, are you, Reggie?
Well, you know, like I said, it's a little more of more like a server or a waiter kind of position where you're serving the guests in the box, whether it be with food or alcohol or meals as it is, but I'm not carrying the weight through the seats. So it's a nice little reprieve from vending. Like I said, at Madison Square Garden and at Barclays Center, I do actually do vending. So it's just a nice little break from that at the Wells.
So I've got to ask you now, you had posted, I think I saw on Facebook when you were at the Super Bowl, how did that gig come around? Because I would imagine every vendor in the country would want to be in on something like that. Or how did you find, do they like post something online or how did you find out?
So for the Super Bowl specifically, a lot of people don't realize that you have to do a background check months in advance before you're even approved to get a credential to work. So to get into a Super Bowl, usually the process starts around October, November to be able to work. So you submit for a background check and you got to wait. This year, it actually took a while to get the results back for everybody. So we weren't sure up until about 6 days before that I had gotten all the vendors got approved to work. So it is a little bit of a process, but it was worth it. I tell you that much. It was a great experience.
But I mean, I would figure like the local guys would get first dibs on that. So do they set aside like so many Super Bowl vending gigs for like the local guys who are always at the stadium, or how does that work?
Like I said, I have a good relationship with the company that runs the Arizona Cardinals concessions. So the same guy that I've worked for at the Suns and the Diamondbacks, he was in charge of the Cardinals this season. And so knowing him, he was able to put me in for a spot this season.
So have you hit the Grand Slam in Philadelphia? Have you done all the venues? You got baseball, football, basketball, hockey. Have you done all four?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've done all four. Philly has become my adopted home. I'm from New York originally, but Philly is, it feels like home to me. You know, I guess the fans are passionate here. I love everything about it. I've done all three and the Union as well. Can't forget about the Union, but like I said, it's been great here.
Have you done the Palestra?
No. I'm still working on trying to get in there. I'm not sure if they have vending or not. I'm not sure if they have guys walking the seats there.
Franklin, does Franklin Field do vending in the stands? It's been ages since I've been there.
From what I understand, I think they, not for football games, but when they do have the track event every year, forgive me, I forget the name. It's the Penn Relays.
Penn Relays.
Yeah,
yes,
April.
Yes. They've asked for guys to come there for that. Time.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and share the screen there for those of you watching on Facebook Live. These are some of the pictures that Reggie sent us from the Super Bowl. I don't know if you can see them without crashing into stuff, but this looks like you're kind of at the corner. Was this after the game here? Was this?
Yeah, that photo is from after the game. That's correct. Like I said, even though the Eagles didn't win and I really wanted them to win, it was still a great experience nonetheless. Seeing the orange and red confetti was tough to stomach, but it was a great experience nonetheless.
So how is vending different at the Super Bowl than at, you know, any other regular season NFL game, or is there no difference?
Oh, that's a great question. So actually for the Super Bowl this season, last minute, the NFL decided that they didn't want anybody in the seats. Which we disapprove of that, but as vendors, you know. But like I said, we still did well. It was a great experience nonetheless.
So you can't do your usual gig of up and down, you know, hot dog, beer. Did they tell you why? Is that like a tradition at all Super Bowls? Or is that just Arizona?
Actually last season in LA, we were able to go in the seats. So I was a little surprised by that decision. But it's ultimately up to every stadium how they want to approach it. But like I said, we were able to sell in the concourse, and it was a great experience nonetheless. So, and also I got to say, it was full of Eagles fans. So it was about about 60 to 70% of the fans that were there were Eagles fans. So
that's what it looked like on television, Lou, and all the pregame show stuff. The ratio of Eagles fans to Chiefs fans had to be like 10 to 2. And, all of the Fox pregame stuff, all you heard were Eagles chants. Now you're up on the concourse in this shot. And what did you could just do beer there, right?
Oh, we had beer. We had Spiked Seltzer. We had a couple different varieties of beer. I want to say Michelob Ultra, Bud Light. We didn't have Miller Lite, which is a Philadelphia favorite, unfortunately, but, like I said, the fans were happy and just eager to be there, which was great. And I loved it. Lots of Philly fans.
Yeah. Now you snuck a Buffalo Bills home game in here. What was the temperature that day?
Oh, it was cold. That was actually the first playoff game there against the Dolphins. This season, that was one of the few stadiums I was missing. And I was able to get up there for the playoff games, which was nice. So
I have a very close friend who's a very, very diehard Buffalo Bills fan. And she's got the accent to prove it.
Reggie, have you ever done boxing or wrestling?
Yes. Yes. I do boxing and wrestling on a regular basis. UFC are pretty cool in Vegas. I did wrestling the 30th anniversary recently at the Wells, maybe about 2 weeks ago, I want to say.
That's got to be a wild crowd.
Yeah, wrestling is definitely. Although, to be honest, it does seem to be a younger demographic, though. So it's not as heavy of a beer drinking crowd. It's more kids and families, which is pretty good.
Now, this was obviously, must have been post-game. Was this post-Super Bowl?
No, that was actually at the Super Bowl, that picture right there.
Yeah, so during the game, or was that after the game?
Pre-game on the concourse. Pre-game on the concourse.
You guys get to pre-game?
Do I pre-game? No, but like I said,
no. It looks like everybody's got a Michelob Ultra there. Oh, yeah, because you got to perform. So you go for the 8-calorie beer.
Yeah. No, it was a great experience there. Those guys were awesome to me. They were very generous. Like I said, they were there pregame when the come-in, when the gates were open, and they were super generous.
So what's you've got Wells Fargo tonight. You've got Flyers tomorrow. And then do you know what your schedule is going to be? You probably have to map it out pretty precisely. You don't do any spring training stuff, do you? You'll just do Phillies when they come here?
I did in the past. This season, I'm just too busy with the arena stuff up here. I will be doing some of the World Baseball Classic this year out in Phoenix. I'll be doing a couple of the Mexico-USA, that bracket. And I'll be doing, St. Petersburg Grand Prix I'll be doing this month, as well as probably Ultra Music Festival in Miami. And let's see what else is on the calendar. The Miami Open tennis, which should be nice.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You and I have talked about that. You're a collegiate tennis player.
Yes. So tennis is my favorite sport. I play tennis. I follow tennis. I grew up with tennis. Tennis, one of the games, if you perform poorly, you can't really blame anybody. You know, it's like...
Yeah, I know.
You can't blame your teammates or coaches. You do what you do on the court, and you just got to leave it all out there.
So, Lou, you and I have talked about this. Maybe we talked about it with Reggie on one of his last appearances. Do you see this whole stadium thing parlaying into like something bigger where you start crap, you become like the air traffic control for vendors around the country? What do you see this morphing into? Because you're a young, fit guy, but eventually it's going to be a real pain in the everything to try to schlep stuff around arenas and ballparks.
You know, like I said, I'm enjoying it at the moment, but I realize physically that I won't be able to do it forever. So I kind of want to start a vending company myself down the road. And I also would like to get into sports media. I think that's an area. I think it's a nice little niche that's unique. I think that fans can appreciate your commentary from that perspective.
Are you keeping notes so you could write a book or write an article about your experiences?
Oh, absolutely. 110%. Like I said, everywhere I go, I try to document it as much as possible. And like I said, there's more and more unique experiences each year. And I also, you get random calls sometimes to do these fun one-off events, which are just great, you know, great opportunities pop up every year.
Yeah. Lou always asks, and what's the weirdest story you have from any of these venues? Anybody like having sex up in the 700 level, or a child born down at field level, or I don't know. What's the weird one?
In Philadelphia, I'll say the Wingle was one of the wildest events I've seen. You know, so RIP to the Wingle, but...
I know. I was sort of saddened about that.
Yeah, you know, I felt like it was a Philly tradition. But I think once they won the Super Bowl, they were kind of like, you know, well, we got the real bowl. We don't need the Wingle anymore.
Yeah. Hey, now, Reg, tell us where you are right now.
So right now, let's flip this around.
I see the Wells Fargo behind you.
Yeah, don't fall into a fountain or something, or a pool.
Hold on, let's see.
Now, are you inside Wells Fargo? Do they have a special entrance you have to go into?
Can you see my camera?
Yeah, we can see.
Yep, so I'm actually walking in through the employee entrance as we speak.
Oh, no, that's pretty cool. Now, is the process the same at every venue? Do you have to? It looks like you got magnetometers.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I travel everywhere with a clear backpack. Hang on, gentlemen. I'm actually going through the metal detector. I'll be right with you.
Yeah, that's fine. I've never been inside one of these, Lou. It's going to be pretty exciting. Hang on. That's an X-ray, so if you got a pacemaker, be careful.
Yep.
Okay, so made it through.
Yeah, I was hoping for a strip search.
No, we're not.
Making it through the chaos here. Give me a second. All right. And I'm headed in. Carlton, how's it going?
And I'm assuming you're well known at the Wells Fargo Center there, Reggie.
Yeah, I've been here. It's going on 6 seasons. It's crazy to see how long I've been here. When you look back on it, you realize where did that time go? But I've been here for 6 seasons.
That's wild. Well, I'll tell you what, Reggie Duval-Saint, the man who is trying to vend in every NFL and Major League Baseball stadium, and he's just about completed that incredible mission. As always, thank you for being on the Museum of Sports Show. And let us know when you're going to be at events on Thursdays, you know, afternoons, because we love our show and tells with you.
Absolutely. So, gentlemen, always a pleasure. I'll be at an event somewhere in America.
Fantastic. One final question. I know you've got all the various uniforms from all of the venues you've been to. Have you added to your sports memorabilia collection?
Yes. So actually, it's funny you say that. So when I was headed to the Super Bowl, people were saying, hey, you know what? I want confetti from the field and all these wonderful souvenirs. Now that the Eagles didn't quite win, it hurts my heart to say that, you know.
Yeah.
But like I said, I brought back all these wonderful souvenirs from the Super Bowl, and I think every Super Bowl that I do, I'm going to try to get an autographed shirt or hat from every Super Bowl that I do.
Yeah, so maybe once you complete like a season, you got a little downtime, we'll head back on with our King of Sports Collectibles, Nick DiPaccio Jr., and you can do a little show and tell with some of the stuff you brought back, and we'll give you a spot appraisal.
All right. Well, thank you so much, gentlemen.
Yep.
Good luck tonight.
The man who is trying and succeeding at being a vendor in every pro stadium in America, Reggie Duval-Saint. As always, thank you for being on the Museum of Sports Show. And I guess go Eagles next year, go Phillies this year, go Sixers this year, go, you know, Flyers this year. And we'll say our prayers. Good luck. Have fun tonight and tomorrow.
Take care, guys. Have a great one. Enjoy.
Thanks, man. Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible contribution today so you can be part of Philly Sports Shrine. When we come back, the man who captures the action, excitement, and all the collisions of the Philadelphia Flyers when the Museum of Sports Show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a couple of minutes.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Parent, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by DiPaccio Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas DiPaccio is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas DiPaccio, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market?
We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Manayunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
In photography, a second is an eternity.
Great sports photographers have to have a real eye for story. You're recording the really wonderful moments.
Back on the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 on the Museum of Sports Facebook Live page is brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Lou Scheinfeld. Susan Baxter is off this week. Our next guest has been capturing the drama and action and violence and pretty much everything in between the Philadelphia Flyers and photographs for years. And he has lived to tell about it. A first-time appearance here on the Museum of Sports Show. A big howdy to Mr. Lenny Redcoles. Lenny, thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Doug and Lou.
I know Lou's got a bunch of stuff for you, Lenny, but I, you know, as somebody who used to have a dark room back in my chronically nerdy days, I was a big black and white 35 millimeter guy and had some stuff exhibited. Yeah. Was sports photography kind of that life's ambition, or was it one of those sort of things that just kind of happened?
Yeah, it kind of happened. I fell into it. I actually went to college in biology. I was a
really
major. Wow. Actually, I was. And talk about loose teeth. I actually was accepted in a dental school prior to I was looking at physical therapy, but as a kid in high school, I liked science, mathematics, and my father was a part-time photographer on the weekends. He worked for DuPont and he worked on the weekends covering local high school sports.
Yeah.
And my senior year in college, I needed an electives course. You know, that semester, spring of 1982. I was looking at the general elective just to boost my GPA. And I seen photography. I said, you know what? Pop's got all the professional equipment in the basement. He's got the black and white darkroom.
Yeah.
And I took the course. And that spring, he was able to get me a press pass to cover a Phillies Cardinals game. And I was bitten. The bug bit me from that point on. And that fall, I went to a Flyers game with him and took my camera there and took my first hockey image, which was Bob Clark and Brian Propp wearing the Cooper Rolls. I actually put that image on my Facebook page when the team had to throw back jerseys. And I was bitten from that point on. And fast forward into the late 80s, I got to meet Roger Gottlieb at the time, who was the PR director of the Flyers. And he'd seen me at the games, and he really was interested in looking at some of my work. And he's seen it, and he says, you know, I see a lot of stuff at that time, like in between amateurs, professionals. He says, you're a cut above the rest. He brought me in and introduced me to Bruce Bennett at that time, who's a very famous National Hockey League photographer. He's been covering the league over 50 years. He, at that time, had the contract with the Flyers, but it wasn't like it is today where you have to beat every game because digital imaging and the internet has changed sports photography.
Yeah.
Back in that day, it was kind of really laid back. You shot your film. It was like a day or two late. You know, it wasn't like it is today. So it kind of snowballed because Bruce lived in Long Island. He held contracts with the Rangers, the Devils, the Islanders.
Oh, wow.
He had he was like the grandfather, I would say. He'll kill me for calling grandfather, but he kind of laid the groundwork for a lot of us, and he created his own NHL wire service. But he later on in the early 2000s, when the digital boom started, you had digital photography, the internet. He sold his businesses and his interests, like his team photographer became the director of hockey imaging at Getty. So at that point is when I kind of got the full contract with the Flyers, but I was involved with the team from 1987 till the present. It was just different, you know, factions and different parts of the organization I worked with. You know, I worked with Roger, then Mark Piazza was PR director, and Mike Richmond was in there for a number of years. And
sure.
I got to know Mr. Snyder very well. I mean, I used to do a lot of personal photos for he and his family for years, like their holiday cards. I used to take all the pictures at their home. So I kind of got to know everyone in the whole organization from Mr. Snyder right on down. And so it just snowballed over a number of years until, like I said, the digital boom really started in the early 2000s. And that's when I got, you know, the official contract with the team. And the NHL came in and structured it too, because they seen kind of like the gold mine this was. Because at that time, each photographer had their kind of own deals with the team. Now the league structures it, they come in and control all 32 team photographers.
Well, then I go back to the very beginning before we played our first game at the Spectrum in October of 67. And Bernie Moser was our photographer. We've had two or three others after that. And of course, you talk about the digital age where you don't have to go to a dark room and develop, but they expect you to send these things out instantly now. So it's kind of like a good and bad. But Bernie would take shots. And of course, they're all black and white. And we'd get him a week later. And he would just come in and hand us 4 or 5 8x10s. That was it. There was no choice. It was, and we didn't know any better. And we thought this is just perfect. So I have a bunch of shots that you've sent me, and a little surprise at the end. But I want to ask you, how does this camera, and I'll show this one if I can, how does the camera work that's in the goal?
Oh, that's by RF radio remote control. It's RF frequency. So I have a digital trigger. Go ahead, Lou. Yeah, I just have a remote. It's just I have the camera remotely attached to like the button, and then I actually have it synced in, because that's not available light, because I actually have a series of strobe lights, because I shoot with strobes in the building. So I actually have twofold things going on here. I have one that triggers the camera remotely, and then from a fraction of a second after that, it triggers the strobe lights in the ceiling. So that's what has that image has a pop over an available light look.
So how do you get the actual picture? I mean, where does the digital picture appear?
Okay, it's on a flash card in the camera, but at this point, I go out in between the intermissions and I physically pull the card out and I take it to my editor. It doesn't transmit out.
That's what I was wondering.
I mean, they have that today, but I still kind of have it set up where I'm doing.
So the camera that's in the cage here, that's not your camera. That's a camera that is installed
The one at the top there is TV's camera, because this picture was particularly from the Stanley Cup final in 2010. So that was like NBC's camera. The one that took my picture, you can't see it because it's in the back of the net all the way in the middle. And now this is taken through the glass. This is just Keith Primo. I think it was 2001.
That's a great shot.
Yeah.
Those are amazing.
But that's, again, with strobe photography. I mean, I still shoot strobe to this day. I still think, I mean, today's digital cameras, that's one of my first ones professionally with the Flyers. That was 1988 of Ron Hextall.
Ron Hextall. Wow. Was this while he was scoring that goal?
No, actually, he didn't score the goal yet. That was a couple years after. Now, this was at the Winter Classic.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
That's Fenway Park, obviously.
And the outdoor games is a blast. I mean, it's a photo opportunity that you just dream about, and it's really something.
What do you, Lenny? I got to ask you a quick question, only because I came from the film realm of things. I have not owned a digital camera beyond the small early snapshot and a cell phone. Right. What do you notice is the chief advantage of digital over film, other than having to change out your film?
The image quality is amazing today in the low light, because you can get an image quality today almost comparable to a strobe image. Years ago, like in the old Spectrum, the old arenas, they were dimly lit, and you shot available light. If you look at the old black and white,
they looked like hell.
They were like snow, and you had grain into them. Where today, with the high digital cameras, I mean, you just take a very pristine image. It's a very large file. And this is available light. This is outside under lights. This was the 2012 Winter Classic. It was Danny Briere had the penalty shot on Lundqvist, win the game, and they just didn't do it. But
what a fantastic shot, Danny Briere, in that uniform that I love.
Yeah, I think this was a penalty shot, if I'm not mistaken. My memory's job, but I remember the game was tied, or they needed to tie. They were down by a goal. But that was New Year's Day at Citizens Bank Park.
You mentioned your closeness with Ed Snyder, and I'm going to show a few pictures of Ed that you sent me that show how happy he was being with his team, his alumni team. Yeah. And, I mean, look at the smile. There's Paul Holmgren behind him.
Yeah.
And I think that's Jack McElhargy back there.
Yes, you're
over
right.
his shoulder, isn't it?
Yeah. That's Jack McElhargy.
And look at that laugh. I mean, he loved his team and his players much.
And he took a great photo. He always did.
They were his family, and you really captured it. And here they're raising another Stanley Cup.
Those past two pictures was 09. That was the last year of the Spectrum before they tore it down. So they played an actual NHL preseason game there against the Carolina Hurricane as the last NHL game ever to be played in the Spectrum. Right. This game where they raised the banner, they had a Flyers fan on inner squad game like a few days after the Flyers Carolina game. So they went and raised the banner for the last time at the Spectrum before they tore it down later that year.
And then look at this one you captured at his.
Oh, that's great.
The party he had at the Spectrum in 2009, I guess it was.
That was January 09. It was the very last event he had at the Spectrum, and he had like 500 of his friends, guests. And at Spectrum at that time was a hollow show. Everything was torn apart. It was only a concrete floor and cement and a tin roof. And they had it set up like as a nightclub restaurant. And Ike Richmond never told me about they were bringing a stand. He always kept things quiet to me. And all of a sudden says, Len, we're going to have Bernie and Bob, or they're going to walk the Stanley Cup up to Mr. Snyder. And I'm trying to get myself ready to capture these images. But it was such a cool event. And then he had, after that, I found out that Earth, Wind, and Fire was one of his all-time favorite groups. And they just blew the roof of what was left of the Spectrum.
Well, that was a surprise. There were only 500 of us there, as you said.
But that Earth, Wind, and Fire was amazing that night.
The curtains were closed, and the curtains opened, and Earth, Wind, and Fire walked out, and we went nuts. And they put on an hour and a half show just for us. And we were like with our elbows up on the stage, leaning on the stage. And you could feel the music. That was great. But here's a fantastic shot you got. Bobby Clark, Bernie Parent, in the pose from the Stanley Cup win. Look at his face. I mean, and look at Clarkie. Look at that smile. But here's a shot that you didn't take.
That's
God.
One of the most famous Jewish hockey players.
Oh, God.
Never to skate properly. And this is a classic. And I think this should be shown at the very end to show the ridiculous and the sublime. You know
what
I mean?
Don't let this happen to you.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that guy, huh? Huh? But you captured Ed. You just captured Ed Snyder. He smiles. This picture, he actually drank out of it in the locker room in 74. I asked him if it was beer or champagne. He said, I don't know. He said it could have been pee. I would have drunk it.
Yeah. That would have been that's wild. Hey, Lenny, did you ever, and maybe it would have been more a case in the early, seat of the pants days of sports photography, did you ever find yourself kind of getting caught up in the action, i.e., players flying up against the glass shattering in the days when that used to happen, or puck coming your way or anything like that?
I've had a puck at times like hit. I use protective filters on my lenses, and I've had a few protective filters hit and smashed. Luckily, it never affected the lenses, but I've been in the line of fire throughout these, not all the time, but in the old days of the Spectrum, we used to shoot out of the penalty boxes when they had no glasses. So we were, in the line of fire, where today we're using holes cut through the glass. And it's very regulated by the league that you have to set a glass cover over when the play comes to you. So it's you maintain the integrity of the glass so it doesn't interrupt the flow of the play and player safety is involved. So things have changed years ago, but I remember glass breaking. I mean, players would hit a puck and boom, it would shatter. And
they'd
stop the game and change out the glass. I mean, that's
when Lou Nolan started, they had no glass in front of the official scorers there, he not only got hit by pucks but by sticks, and guys would be fighting, climbing over and fighting the fans. The Boston Bruins climbed up into the stands. And climbed right over the announcers. So hockey's dangerous. I mean, look, I lost a tooth just broadcasting today.
But Lenny, I guess you know, you were talking about the difference between, you know, the digital days and the old film days. And you were talking about, you know, in many cases, you know, sports photojournalists, they've got to transmit those as soon as they're shot. If do they transmit automatically, or do you have to sit down then and upload what you've shot once you've kind of curated it?
Well, the during a National Hockey League game today, the NHL pays for an editor. So I have an editor who's working with me. So he's pulling my flashcards like 5-8 minutes into a period. And he's putting
Still have to pull the card then.
But there are cameras today that can transmit. I'm kind of happy with the system I got right now, but it'll eventually get to there. I mean, there are transmit that uploads everything live to a PC. But we're still getting images up through the entire game. The league requires that.
Yeah, and that's what I figured.
Teams, yeah, because it's different today, too, being a team photographer. The NHL runs it, and you have to cover both teams equally. Because the other team, because they don't have – oh, there's your dog.
right on cue. Right, scouts right on cue. Yeah, because, you know, having been around, you know, television news for almost 4 decades and, you know, things got smaller and more portable and photographers had little transmitters on the back of their cameras. And I'll be damned if I would have one of those that close to my head. Yeah. And I'm just lucky, you know, I still haven't been rendered infertile, you know, just with all that RF coming out of microwaves and backpacks and everything else. But where do you see the industry going, Len? I mean, it's so controlled by the leagues now. It used to be kind of, you know, the Wild West, but everybody's a team guy now.
Yeah, it's controlled. It's very regimented by the league. And like Getty Images is just a huge function entity in its own, which they own a lot of rights to a lot of. So it's, I think when the digital boom came about, you know, like 2000, the internet, I think like, you know, entities like Getty and all the sports leagues, the NHL, NBA, they all did this. They all came in and bought our rights out. I mean, they structured a contract and gave it to all the photographers, but it's more regimented and structured today. As I said, in the older days, we all had our own deals and it was kind of a little more ability to, you know, to deal with the teams or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and are the players, you know, I'm talking with a lot of my sports journalism guys, the players, are they any more accessible these days, or they just as soon you not be there?
I think personally they're a lot more accessible today than was years ago due to social media. I think back when I started, I would have locker room access, but it was nothing like it is today. I mean, the guys are very sociable. They know, like someone like yourself, they know who I am. And people that work with the team, the team also has social media video guys and handle their Twitter and Instagram accounts. And it's just more sociable because I think the players realize that they're going to be seen in a good light, you know, so they want to interact with the social media people. But they're more accessible, I would say, today.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, the images are just absolutely amazing and just keep them coming, Lenny. The man behind the incredible pictures of the Philadelphia Flyers over the years, Lenny Redcoles, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the Museum of Sports show today.
Oh, it was great to be here. Thank you, Doug and Lou. And it's great seeing you again, Lou. So,
you too. I'll look better next time. Lenny.
I know.
That's pretty authentic looking there, Lou. You'll need to get some shots of that, Lenny, before he gets that new implant put in. Hey, when we come back, our King of Sports collectibles, when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a minute.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Now available. The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Lou Scheinfeld. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the Pachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Up next, as always, our king of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection worth well in excess of $35 million. And they are proud partners in the Museum of Sports. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Nick DePaccia Jr.
Hey, and Lou, you'll be happy to know I found a laptop in our office that's not being used that I can go on Zoom through that instead of my phone.
Take it
is that
home.
What you're on now?
Take it home and make sure nobody gets it.
Is that what you're on now? This is groundbreaking here in the Museum of Sports Show. You're on the laptop now?
I'm not on my phone. I'm on the laptop.
Wow. Holy crap. This is,
and
this
you're
is
much
big.
Better looking.
This is big. Yeah.
Actually, so are
oh
you.
Oh, my God. So, Nick, I guess we were off last week, so we didn't get your take on the Super Bowl, but we saw all the pictures you posted online. That was pretty cool. Tell us what that experience was like, win, lose, or draw.
Okay, so it was a great trip, but it's made or broken through the result of the game. So it went from being a potentially great trip to being miserable. honestly, it would have been one of the best trips of my life if the Eagles had come away with a victory. But that really made the difference between being an awesome vacation and being depressed for the next 12 months or so. until the next Super Bowl, because even if the Eagles get off, let's say they get off to 11-0 start or something, you know, we're still going to say, well, none of this matters until we get to the big game.
Yeah.
Walking out of that stadium collectively as Eagles fans, we just felt so disheartened. We felt like this is the one that got away, because I don't think that the Eagles are going to have as good of a team going forward. We're not going to be able to keep everybody. So, there's Bryce Harper right there. But yeah, we're not going to be able to keep.
I'm just trying to find stuff in your Facebook page. This is pretty cool, though.
Who's in this picture? That was there.
It's Chris.
I'll bring it back Chris up. My picture's screwing up. There we go.
But it was our friend Chris Galley and our other friend Mike DeLude, and my dad and myself, of course. And this was in downtown Phoenix. And that building in the background, we thought it was really cool how it had this logo. And we went to what's called the NFL Experience, or the Super Bowl Experience. I forgot the exact name of it. But the reason we went there, it's sort of like a fan fest type of thing.
Right.
They have activities, and they have shopping and food and stuff. But we went there for the main purpose of bidding on Hunt Auctions annual Super Bowl auction.
Oh.
Yeah. So, Lou, we did get some things. So your weekly question.
ask it, Lou.
Did Mom let you buy anything?
Well, that's a different question. Did she let us?
Did they just operate without authority? Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a very long day. We were there for a while, but they had many items from the Walter Payton collection. So we did get a bunch of plaques and awards that Walter Payton had won throughout his illustrious career.
What would those be like? Just like early in his like high school and college stuff, or stuff during his NFL days?
Oh, from his pro days.
All NFL, pro yeah. Days.
Yeah, we did get a game-used jersey of Justin Herbert's. We got a few little trinkets here and there. Like if something was reasonable and we thought it was good, like some things that are more aesthetically pleasing.
Right.
But we also got, we got a few things from, it's like a jacket from the 40s or 50s.
Mm.
And it was, and it's a real authentic jacket that was, worn by one of the players on the Penn football team. So I said, we have to bid on that. And thankfully we won that.
And you came, you came home with some good stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, it's, we didn't come home with it necessarily, but it's,
Yeah.
But we will be seeing it shortly. Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, our first guest on was a guy we've had on multiple times. And I think we've asked you this question in the past. It's Reggie Duval Saint. He is the guy who's made it his life's work to be a vendor in every NFL or MLB stadium, but he's actually racking up a pretty good total with NHL and NBA. But he got the Super Bowl gig. And I think he may have, I think we may have mentioned this in one of his past appearances. He has, what do you say, Lou, an entire closet full of the uniforms or the pennies or both?
Uniforms from his vendor appearances.
And so I can't remember if we asked you that in the past one, but what would like a vendor uniform from a Super Bowl be worth versus, you know, just your run-of-the-mill playoff or regular season stuff for NFL?
Oh, absolutely. That a Super Bowl vendor uniform would be worth more as long as there's something that differentiates itself from a regular season game. But I mean, it's not going to be worth thousands of dollars, but I mean, it could be worth like 750 to a thousand.
It's better than a kick in the crotch, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
How about if it's got mustard and relish on it?
See? Whereas,
yeah, no, a Jacksonville Jaguars regular season game, maybe if you get $20 for it, that might be good. Now, how do you share a screen? Because I did. I got up one of the things that I that we had won that I think is a good novelty piece. It's not, this isn't a real expensive piece, but it's along the lines of like the Johnny Unitas jock strap that I think it's like something that it's entertaining and it will be a conversation piece. So,
yeah, let me share it. Let me see if I can figure out how to give you permission to share.
There's a green little green box down in the middle in the tray.
Yeah, you may have that. I don't know that we are prohibited. So if you go down and roll your cursor over the bottom of the frame there, Nick, there you go.
Okay. So
you got it.
The Beautiful Lips Award. Wow.
Walter Payton
from Blistex. Okay. Yeah, that's self-aggrandizing there.
So that's not one of the more expensive items we got, but it
so what was can you say what that one was? What did you pay for that one?
Well, you can see underneath it says estimated price range
400 to 600, so you're in that range.
It was within that range, I can tell you that.
Okay. I won't ask why, but go on.
I honestly was the one pushing for it. I said, you got to get this. This is a great conversation piece. I said, I mean, it really is. It's like, it's just something that will stop people in their tracks and be like, what the hell is this?
That it will do. Yes.
So that is one. That's not one of, like I said, the more prestigious items we won or one of the more expensive, but it was something that I think is really, worth looking at, and it just brings a laugh to everyone who sees it. So
that's a one of a kind. Any others you got there?
Let me see. I should have had the list of, well, here, so this isn't all stuff we bought, but this is some of the stuff that that was being sold. Some of it we got, but let's see. We were going for this one. This one,
now that's a little bit the out of 1985 Offensive Player of the Year Award.
Yeah, that unfortunately went for a little bit more than we wanted to shell out. But
yeah, because they were saying it was in the 13,000 plus range.
Yeah, no, that's one of the nicer items. Exactly. Mm-hmm. We got one of these footballs. So there were a bunch of these types of footballs that were game balls. So it's not this specific one, but we did get one of them.
And was that another rushing yard milestone?
Yeah, all these milestones that he got when he passed certain players or got to certain numbers. Yeah, so they
fantastic.
Yeah, so
what was that one? The price is cut off on that one. Were you up in that range?
No, we didn't get this one. This one is 7,500 to 15,000. And I think it went for over 20. No, this one we didn't get, but we got one that's, it's not as big of a milestone.
You got the Nerf football one?
Yeah, the Nerf football one, exactly. But something for the price that we thought we were getting. Let me see. Yeah, I wish I wrote down the lot numbers that we actually did get, but you could see the type of things that were there. When they come in, I'll try to get them on the air.
It's just astonishing when you see this from a player's personal collection, but it is also just crushingly sad at the same time to realize, these were cherished items, and I guess, the heirs are just, what am I going to do with all of this stuff? And maybe it was in the estate planning that you can auction it all off, but it's just always sad to see that stuff go up for auction. Great for collectors, obviously.
And Walter Payton is an icon in the game. They have one of the most prestigious award is named after him, the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And the winner of that this year famously or infamously got booed at the Super Bowl, as we saw. But it's not our fault that he was a Dallas Cowboy.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Nick, before we run out of time, I want to tell you that next week we're going to have on our show a gentleman who owns a company, just started it, that has an app where you just take a picture of your sports card and it will tell you instantly how much it's worth.
Local guy
from New Jersey just started the company. I think it's called COLLX Collects.
We're gonna have to. Nick,
and he's gonna be on the show. He just got $5.5 million investment from somebody, and I think it's like a brilliant invention.
I'd love to talk to him.
We'll get your take on that next week. We are out of time for this week. We want to thank all of our guests: America's Stadium Vendor Reggie Duval Saint, Flyers Team Photographer Lenny Redcoles, and of course our King of Sports Collectibles, Nick DePaccia Jr. And do not forget to buy Lou's new book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Flash and Cash rescued the Flyers and created America's greatest show, or Philadelphia's greatest showplace. Portion of the proceeds will go to the Museum of Sports, and you can get a custom autographed copy by going to themuseumofsports.org. Lou will pen it with his very own crayon. And the Museum of Sports show brought to you by the DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld, Susan Baxter, and Nick DePaccia Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says. Lou?
These are the good old days.